Welcome back to the Casey Adams Show. Today, I am joined by Jake Plonskier, the co-founder of Watches.io. Jake, thanks so much for coming on today.
Thank you for having me. Excited to be here.
Of course, man. So it's so great. I think we initially connected on Instagram. I saw that you had the handle at Watches. And then I looked more into the platform. We connected. And it's so cool to see what you and the team have built thus far. And quite frankly, just understanding your background and seeing the passion for watches outside of the platform is just so cool to see. But for those that may not know what watches.io is, would love to have you give some context before we dive in.
Definitely. So watches.io, I view it as a pretty game-changing platform. A lot of the websites to buy watches online or just interact with the watch industry currently, you know, they feel like luxury marketplaces, a place that you can go and buy your next beautiful luxury watch. And like, you know, when it arrives, it's going to look so great on your wrist. Watches.io takes a different approach. We try to, you know, bucket watches into this investment asset, perspective that you're buying something that is going to potentially go up in value or be a store of value or could be used in some sort of, you know, financial DeFi protocol, which is, you know, later in the conversation, but trying to let users feel like they're on Robinhood, you know, make a data-driven decision when they buy into the watch, less emotional. So that's kind of Watches.io. It's an analytics platform and a trading exchange to buy and sell watches.
Love that. So what was the first watch that you bought or the watch that got you into this whole space in terms of the passion and just the love for watches and the craft? What was that moment for you?
It's a good question, actually. So basically in school, I was in college at the time, and I was beginning to help a friend's startup, which was selling watch straps, get off the ground and start getting some traction. And, you know, I'm like 20 years old at the time, 21 years old, you know, and I basically financed a Panerai from Joma Shop, I think it was. And it was like $100 a month, $150 bucks a month. And the reason I bought this Panerai was that it allowed for me to put every single watch strap that we made onto the watch and at least, you know, connect with the brand. So that was kind of like my first time really taking a financial risk to kind of get myself forward, which I think is a recurring theme in kind of bringing a company and a vision to life. And throughout the journey, I've had a bunch of different watches. Right now I'm wearing a Mad Red.
MBNF. What is that? I don't even know what a Mad Red is.
Yeah.
If you're watching this, it's something is spinning on the watch.
Yeah, it's a fidget spinner on the wrist.
Wow.
So yeah, that was the first watch. And then I've had an AP, I've had some Rolexes, I've bounced around. That Panerai though was kind of was the first step that I've ever taken towards, you know, putting it all on the line, let's just say, you know, not really having an income yet, wanting to help a friend with his company and basically saying like, yo, to get into this industry, you got to get a watch on your wrist. You got to have one of them. You got to, you know, so yeah, good question.
What does a watch mean to you? Right. Cause I think as someone too, that I have such a love and appreciation for watches, they mean different things to different people, right? One could be like, you know, you appreciate the craftsmanship. One could be, you know, when you walk into a room, it can command a different level of presence and respect, right? If you see Jay-Z walk in with a Tiffany blue Patek, you're like, okay, you know, outside of being Jay-Z, but just the craftsmanship and the rare aspect of watches can make him great conversational pieces and just true stories to tell. But for you, what does, you know, a watch on your wrist mean to you? And what is that feeling mean to you, and has it changed over time?
Yeah, big time. It's definitely evolved. When I first bought that Panerai, it was definitely a tool, right? It was a way for me to be in the watch industry, or at least feel connected to it. It was a way for me to create content. It was business as well, you know, like it was more of like I'm putting on, you know, my suit, you know, like you, the way you're in finance, you wear a button down. When you're in this industry, you put on your watch. And that's kind of how it felt. Then I got into watches. Like I started getting a little bit more passionate. Like I got a cooler Panerai, like an all ceramic one, because I love the ceramic finish on the Panerais. Like and then I started getting more into it. I traveled to Switzerland. I've been to China, and you start seeing how, you know, this industry, specifically like the manufacturers like AP, you know, they're not moving their operation to a mass production factory that's banging out, you know, millions of units. Yeah. They're really keeping it, you know, in the family. They're building small quantities. So that's when I started gaining an appreciation as I got in the industry. Not just like, oh, that's cool, I want that one because it looks good. Then I started really being like, wow, like, that's epic. Like the way that the Tourbillon was founded by, you know, Breguet, and he was like really close with the Audemars family in the 1900s. And then they like worked together in the cold Swiss winters to perfect watchmaking. And that's when I started gaining like a real appreciation. And then I started getting into the investment side of everything. Like, wow, I can buy a watch and it can go up in value. There's an AP that I wore that, you know, I think was sold for like $14,000 profit. And it's like, all right, like that's another side of watches. That's what really got me hooked into building Watches.io. And then now I think of it as like, you know, I hate to say it, but like all the basic watches, which are like anything that's like, you know, entry level steel or like, you know, a basic yellow gold or rose gold watch. Like, I feel like even though, you know, I haven't had many crazy heavy hitters, I feel like I'm a little bit over them and I need to wear like an independent manufacturer, an up and coming brand, something that's unique. Like I can't see myself wearing like a Wimbledon, you know, it's this beautiful watch, awesome piece, but I need something like this, you know? And it's, so that's where I'm at now with watches and my opinion of the asset.
All right. So you brought up the watch you're wearing now. What is that again? And I've never heard of
that. It's a Mad One Red. It was basically
Mad One Red.
Mad One Red, it's a offshoot of the brand MB&F. And basically, MB&Fs are like $250,000 watches, right? And the founder's Max Busser. I think he used to be at Piaget before he started the company. You know, I was in Dubai at Mad Gallery, and one of the employees at the Mad Gallery, which is MB&F's, you know, boutique, they call it a gallery. Yeah. They told me, they're like, people come into this boutique and they say, hey, like I just sold my company for $300 million. I finally can afford one. Can I get one? And they're like $250,000 pieces. And they're like, yo, they're all sold out. We don't have anything. Yeah. And you know, whether it's vendors or family members of the people that work at the company, everybody wants a MB&F watch, but pretty much everybody's unable to get them because they make such a small quantity. Yeah. So the founder, Max Busser, basically rolled out a ancillary brand. And the way it works is via a lottery where you submit an application, they pick you, and I think they put out 500 watches or 1500, some small amount.
Wow.
And this was last year's lottery watch, and
that's incredible.
I personally had to trade another watch for it. I wasn't able to win the lottery, but it's a cool concept.
Yeah, no, that's really cool. Where is that brand based in Dubai?
They have a boutique in Dubai. They have a boutique as well in I think in Taiwan or Hong Kong, but and then you know some like offshoot sellers like Chrono Passion in Paris, but they're based in Switzerland.
Got it. Yeah, that's awesome. When you talked about the brand that you worked for early on, I believe you're talking about Horace Straps, is that right?
Absolutely, yeah.
How did you meet Mark from Horace, and what were you doing before that? I know you have a master's in accounting. Like, what were some of the career endeavors/projects that you were working on, or just industries you wanted to be in before stumbling into working at, you know, the Horace Straps company and meeting Mark, and really how did that come together?
Yeah, so I've known Mark most of my life. We grew up in the same town, became really good friends in high school, and then basically he was working with another business partner at the time, and they co-founded Horace. And what I always found really interesting was how they were leveraging Instagram at a very early stage in the now platform that runs our lives, but like in the early days of like the platform, you know, nobody was really using Instagram as a business tool at the time. It was a way to post photos. So I'm in school getting a bachelor's and a master's in accounting. And, you know, I always felt like I should have been doing something entrepreneurial, but I also wanted that high quality education that will set me up. Cause like, I guess, you know, that's the pill I was swallowed at the time or chewing, whatever. Yeah. But so I was always fascinated with what they were doing. And I saw like, you know, Horace had Motion from day one. The watch straps are sick. Like I'm sure you've seen them.
For sure. I have a bunch of them.
Yeah. They're beautiful. So the brand always had motion, like whether it was like a little celebrity was interested in it or they got like a random DM from Jake Paul or something. But I saw a big opportunity to kind of turn something that I felt like was a, you know, a small Instagram hustle into like a real global brand. And it was just like, it aligned with my education. It aligned with, you know, me, you know, creating a career for myself, which was something that felt very entrepreneurial to me. And I was basically, you know, and I've always had like little businesses myself. Like I had a company in college. I had a company in high school myself.
What were those companies, just for the context?
Yeah, I had a cell phone and accessory distribution company. So like, okay, kind of like, you know, those Solarises and those little kiosks in the mall with all the phone cases, sure, and the chargers. I was arbitraging eBay and Craigslist before it was a thing, just like figuring out how to make money that way. And then
so good.
And then in college, I sold burritos, believe it or not. Which is
how,
like,
how did that? You sold burritos where?
Burritos. So basically, I would send out the burrito company. I would send out a form on Sundays, and it would, you know, list out the different types of burritos you can get. And they're all, I think it was like if Chipotle was $8, they were $7, right?
Okay.
And the burrito came with like eggs, beef, beans, a special sauce that I made. And it was like, you know, straight protein gains, you know, college.
Yeah.
And did pretty well. Like it paid so for pretty much all my expenses in school.
Wow.
And so I always had that entrepreneurial itch, right? But I never had anything serious. I was taking school pretty serious as well. You know, always, I loved getting an accounting degree. It was definitely, you know, a hustle. I think it prepped me well. And
absolutely.
Yeah, so that was where things kind of got interesting. So I helped out Horace for a summer, and then a couple months after, before I had a full-time job offer from PwC in New York City, which is like, you know, a big accounting firm. And basically, yep, I wasn't really passionate about going to work at PwC. I wanted to really see Horace kind of like get off the ground, you know, pick up speed. And there's maybe like 5-10, I don't know the amount, but like very few amounts of actual authorized dealers selling the product. Yeah. And I was very fascinated with how, like, you know, there's hundreds of Rolex boutiques worldwide. And I was like, you know, that's what we have to build for ourselves. Like Horace has to be something that you can find at every celebrity jeweler's shop. It's something that you can find at whatever. So that's when I started, you know, going ham. Like I wouldn't even sleep. I remember the first 3 months that I started going full time at Horace after college, before PwC, we had a trip to China planned. And the founder and one of our friends was like, Jake, you should come. Jake, you should come to China. It's going to be epic. And I'm like, yo, I'm in my bag. Like I'm focused. And
And
that's when I was like messaging, like I'm talking to like Eliante, I'm talking to Jane the Jeweler, I'm talking to Bobara, I'm talking to everybody that you've seen on Instagram that's got, you know, a reputation in hip hop and culture, Trotters, A Jewelers, like, and I'm sending all of them out product. I'm getting them to promote us on Instagram. I'm just getting to know the people, traveling to meet them, like really giving this company a foundation, right? And then like PwC, you know, kind of hit this point where I was like, all right, am I going to work at Horace or PwC? There was some stuff that had to get organized. I was like, all right, let me just do a couple months of PwC at the least, see how it goes. Yeah. And, you know, I'm obviously skipping through a lot of the story, but worked at PwC and just absolutely hated it, right? Like miserable.
What
like,
was it? Because going from pure startup environment to then large organization, large enterprise, what was your initial reaction to that, and how did you feel during that time?
Bro, I was in the banking, capital markets, insurance, tax group at PricewaterhouseCoopers, New York City. This accounting office, this PwC, if it was its own accounting firm, like just this building would be the fifth largest accounting firm in the entire world. If there was an attack on this building, the capital markets would feel it instantly. Like, this is like a very, like, you know, the floors would get shined every single night with a Zamboni, like that type of corporate environment. And man, it wasn't for me. Like, I was in charge of setting up, you know, K-1 tax returns for a bunch of reinsurance entities. I was, you know, organizing, let me turn off that mute. I was organizing a bunch of different, you know, like 1065s and 1020 tax returns. Like, I had the education, but I didn't have the passion. Now, you know, on the side, I was still helping out Horace, very passionate about what they were doing. There was never like a loss of heart right there, right? And basically, one thing led to another. I was able to close the biggest deal in the company's history at that time. I think it was like a $45,000 wholesale deal to an authorized exclusive distributor in Russia. We never had exclusive distributors at this time, but I realized there's a business model. You go up to somebody and you say, hey, you're in India or you're in Russia or you're in Mexico. We'll give you exclusive rights to the country. If anybody reaches out to us, we'll pass along the deal to you. And now your minimum purchase quantity is significantly higher than like, you know, a 25 strap order. Now I'm selling 400 straps or 800 straps in a purchase order. And the commission came in on that deal. Next thing you know, I got an apartment in Brickell. I'm back at Horace. and that was that. Bye-bye, New York. Yeah.
Oh my gosh. Wow. So you're back to Miami. And then just for the context now, you're based in Miami. The company Watches IO is based in Miami as well. When was it that you started this company and what led to the transition to say, hey, you know, I love watches. I've worked in the watch business in terms of horse strap and having that experience to then, okay, I want to build a platform that helps with the transactions and really the entire, you know, blockchain element to it as well that you can speak to. But when was the idea for Watches IO brought upon you and how did you then take that and of course go execute and what was that time frame like?
Yeah, so I stopped working at Horace in May 2021. I was in New York City when I quit. And, you know, I instantly wanted to create a product that was able to leverage all the connections I made over the last few years and make a better platform for them, right? And I wasn't necessarily so focused on blockchain at the time. I was very focused though on creating a platform that was focused on letting people trade watches based off data and leverage their social media to increase their own revenue. I felt like on a lot of the websites like eBay and Chrono 24, you know, you're just a seller. That's all. Mm-hmm. That's all you are. You're not like, you know, celebrity jeweler to this artist and this athlete, and you've built up your whole brand on social media. And then at the same time, a lot of the jewelers and watch traders that I was connected with were getting their Instagrams pulled down randomly. Like, you know, and people used to be like, why is this happening? Is it another jeweler targeting me? Is it one of the brands seeing that I'm reselling? And I was like, how can you like invest, you know, millions of dollars into your social media? And how can you build such like a credible brand for yourself and then just get like wiped off the internet overnight?
Yeah.
At the same time, as well, as I'm ideating this, I had a meeting with some crypto guys. They were like a prop fund that was basically tracking a very large hedge fund's wallets. And we had dinner and I was with one of my friends who's, you know, a celebrity. And basically they were explaining to him how like, hey man, like we're buying, what we're doing is we're tracking these wallets and we're putting all this money into liquidity pools and we're following their motion and then we're investing at the same time. And that was when I first got introduced to the concept of staking and DeFi. And I was just like, I swear, like instantly hooked. Like I became obsessed, like 15 hours a day. And fortunately, I didn't have a job. So I was kind of just riding my own wave. I was going to like Mexico with Steve Will Do It and I was traveling and like doing cool things, but I didn't have any actual like commitment to anybody. So I was able to spend probably like 4 to 6 months like getting educated in a way that I felt like not a lot of other people were doing at the time, especially in the bull run. I also didn't have income coming in every single week. I was kind of leveraging what I had saved up to kind of live. And I wasn't able to just sit there and invest in trade. Like when you're making money, you could always, you know, buy new things. But when you don't have money coming in, you kind of have like a different mindset. So for me, I wasn't really getting caught up in the commotion. I was very focused on like, all right, like this technology is really interesting. Gen Z millennials seem to be addicted to it. Like what about it is super, you know, intriguing and where do I see it kind of going? And that's when I started really seeing how like NFT technology in specific would kind of like cross over with the financialization of assets, right? Like, I always felt like an NFT for a JPEG was kind of like, you know, it kind of felt like how virtual reality was brought to light via the Nintendo Wii, but now like open heart surgery is conducted with VR. And I always felt like, you know, there was a opportunity for this technology, like NFTs, like it just seemed like they're made to represent physical assets on the blockchain. Like, you know, obviously there's currency, but then there's also like physical assets. And I just, the crossover made sense. So then started getting into NFT trading, and like I hit a couple huge licks, like, and I was like, all right, like, and that's how I think a lot of crypto starts for people, is something happens where you 100x or 50x and you're just like hooked. And then so that happened for me. And then I was like, all right, like this vision that I have of creating a platform is now going to be a, you know, a platform that's all on chain. And at the time it was called Float Game. Like that was the name of the platform.
It was called Float Game.
Float Game. Yeah.
Got it. And it was the watch platform idea name.
It was watches and jewelry.
Got it.
It was basically the whole thing, you know, jewelry right now goes down in value. Like you buy like a chain from, you know, Ben Baller, like a tennis necklace, right? Unless if it's like going to say Ben Baller everywhere, but if it's just like this, like a basic tennis, you know, you buy it for 15,000, let's just say, you can't sell it for 55,000, but you can go buy like a pair of Yeezys for 150 bucks and you can sell them for 700. And I was like, why are shoes going up in value, but not designer gold and diamond jewelry from celebrity jewelers? Like it didn't, they needed some way to kind of get that secondary, you know, value, kind of like NFTs. So I was really focused on combining watches, jewelry, blockchain, NFT trading, et cetera. Man, like I was, you know, when you have like a new business idea and you're talking about it a bunch and you just don't know how to verbalize it. And everybody's like, I get it, but I don't. I see it, but I don't.
Absolutely.
I just went through that for like a year, like no other way to put it. It was a total botch. And burnt a lot of money.
What year is this on? You're talking about NFTs, bull market. Is 2021 when you're ideating on this, or what?
Float Game started in July 2021, and by December 2021, it was like all Web3.
Yeah.
And then it started getting Web3 like October, November, or September, October, November, December. And then December was like, all right, like we're bringing watches and jewelry on the blockchain. Then January, February, March, April, I was still trying to make Float Game work with jewelry, watches, blockchain. And then that's when it all kind of like that's when it all started coming down, and I kind of crashed for a bit. I was really like down. I was like, damn, like I've been trying to make this happen for a year. Like I've had conversations with everybody at this point, like, you know, people from like the biggest NFT projects, the biggest jewelers in the industry. And I've tried talking to everybody about a partnership, you know, a deal, whatever.
Yeah.
And then I decided I was like going to take a month off. I was going to get my head right about what's going to work. I'm going to ditch the name Float Game, and I'm going to go back to the drawing board. And I remember I had like a specific 48-hour window where I tried to let myself stay in a specific dream state. I essentially like wrote down during this period, like, I know this sounds like it's like out of a book, but it was, I don't know, like I needed to do this with my life. I remember I was driving for like 10 hours, like just looping South Florida in a car.
No way.
And and then whenever I had a thought, I would just write it down in the notepad and just keep driving. And I noted down like all the things that I felt were really important for me to be able to craft what I was thinking into something successful. And one of the things was like, I needed like a real brand partner. I was like, yo, Jake, like, yeah, you have some followers on Instagram and friends in the industry, but you need like a real brand too. You need to find engineer, co-founder, technical lead. Like you need that type of person on the team. You can't just like try to get dev shops or find random developers.
It's hard doing that. And we did that, not to cut you off, but at Media Kits, it was myself and my co-founder, and we didn't have we had no technical co-founders to start with. And that recruiting phase is obviously, it's not impossible, but looking back, it sets you up in a more disadvantaged approach versus having someone on board. Not to say one is right or wrong. People do it all the time and are extremely successful. But I totally get that perspective. And I think that's important to point out.
Yeah. And there's so many different types of engineers too. So like, you know, for ourselves who are more, you know, focused on brand and creation, like we're not you know, we don't have an engineering background, so you don't necessarily know where to start. Like, oh, do I need like a front end guy, back end guy, a web engineer? And our former company, you know, at Horus, it was a Shopify. So if there's ever any sort of development work, we would just outsource it to our development guy, pay him a couple thousand and move on. Like, it wasn't really an engineering company. Right.
Yeah.
And, so I noted everything down, took time off, and then I completely rebranded and I came up with the name Horadex, Horologies Decentralized Exchange. And this was the vision. I also at the time got into connection with a front-end designer, a UI designer, Arsh. This kid, like, and I think this was like where it really, this is when the story starts, you know, getting better, let's just say. I was like, Arsh was like, hey man, like, I think what you're doing is like really cool, I'd love to help you. And I'm like, look, can you make me like an epic landing page so that we can have something to show people? Actually, sorry, story's a little messed up. I met Arsh right after I stopped doing Float Game, before I came up with the name Horadex. And I was essentially testing Arsh to see his design skills. And he made a landing page for Float Game. And he told me he could make it, you know, like on React and everything.
Yeah.
And then when it came to actually developing it, not just the design file, he was like, hey, like, I got to get my buddy to help me, Alok. He can make this into a beautiful landing page. And Arsh and Alok made my vision come to life in a landing page format in like 4 days. And I was
so
like,
good.
I was like, yo, we're off to something.
Yeah.
And then I was like, yo guys, like we should start working on something with watches and da, da, da. That's when I started really ideating space. I'm like, now that I got this design, like, what do I need? What, like, whatever. And, yeah, so we came up with a design, for the Horadex marketplace. We built out all of the front end, every edge case. We completely made the end-to-end front end. And then I met up with one of my buddies off Instagram at the time, on Instagram Authority, Nefez, and I had lunch with him. I showed him the design file, and he was like, yo, like what you're doing is like really cool. I do a lot of things on social media. I do a lot of things with networking, but I've never really been connected to a technology startup. And I feel like that's like what you're doing here. And I want to be involved. I want to help. I want to contribute in whatever way I can. And like he meant it. Like he instantly was like, and I didn't want any investors at the time. Yeah. I didn't want to take conversations with people. I didn't want to do meetings. I just wanted to build this product. Because now I had designers, now I was able to bring my vision to life, and that's all I wanted to do. And he introduced me to like 3 or 4 angels, who, I mean, kids at the time and like his network, I didn't understand they were just gonna be my earliest investors. And basically they're like, yo, like I'm down to invest. This is sick. I'm down to invest. And like all of a sudden I had like, you know, which I think the math was like $60,000-$70,000 lined up.
Yep.
So with this. And this was all due to Nefez's networking. With this, I was able to go to a couple crypto conferences and I brought that front end product with me that felt like, I mean, not
and at the point now, because this is landing page, the idea is becoming real. You're building out the team now. It's like, okay, let's go build this product. Is that right?
Yeah. Yeah. And from day one of Float Game, and this is what I learned at Horus, that I think a lot of people that create startups, we can go through like advice at the end, but like, you got to remember that you just can't quit and you can't even think about it. Like, even if it's not working, you just got to keep going. Even if people tell you it sucks or you need to get a job or what are you thinking? Or, you know, even if freaking SBF rugs the entire crypto economy, you still keep going. Like, you do not stop. And so even with Float Game, like I did not stop. I knew I had to change the name. I knew I had to change some of the vision, but I knew I had to keep going. And so yeah, now it's starting to get motion. Now I have a product where, yeah, there's no back end, but if you like use it on your computer and I showed it to you right now, you'd be like, yo, this is sick. Like you can see all the prices of watches. You can buy.
So I want to talk about that and I'll link it down below, but how do people interact with Watches.io today? Because I know I've been on the site and I've seen it, so I have the experience there. But for people that are listening or watching this, I'd love for you to give some context to, again, the user experience and where it is now and sort of the vision for where you see it going.
Yeah. So Zoom forward, got the best in Web3 behind the company, brought on back-end engineers. And long story short, now you can go to Watches.io and it's a basic analytics platform. You're able to add your watch collection. You can track it in real time and you can see the values of, you know, your entire portfolio. What we're working on right now is a marketplace that feels kind of like an OpenSea for watches, you know, a very rudimentary V0 concept that is, it's really cool. What we plan on doing over time is adding additional complexity to turn it into something that's a crossover between something like a Bloomberg terminal meets, you know, Binance trading exchange. Like, yeah. At the same time, introducing our own in-house financial products. What's most unique about our marketplace right now is you're actually able to purchase a luxury watch, and instead of getting the actual luxury watch, you can choose to get watch-backed NFT of it, a watch-backed NFT, which is our trademark term for an NFT that's backed by a physical watch. And for example, like, let's say you buy a Rolex Daytona watch-backed NFT, the actual Daytona, the $30,000 watch, is inside of our vault where it's stored under full insurance, you know, it's collateralized. And then you're able to take your NFT to supported protocol partners of ours. So, like, you've heard of maybe Arcade or NFTFi or, you know, Astaria. And you can essentially access liquidity that's been secured on chain from these platforms. And what that means in, like, basic terms is...
Yeah, you know, how does that work for people that are like, okay, so I spend $30,000 on a watch-backed NFT. Okay, maybe, you know, they don't have the watch. So what's the value for someone in that point of view?
Yeah, one, a watch-backed NFT could be instantly sold. So you don't need to worry about like a 2-day payout or a 15-day payout. You buy an NFT and you put it up for sale. A minute later, you get paid out a minute later. Like, it's like NFT trading for watches. So that's a super cool benefit too, is you don't have to worry about shipping and logistics. You can obviously redeem your NFT for a watch, and we'll send you that and we'll take the NFT back from you. But then also the NFT is able to represent on the blockchain the physical asset, kind of like what NFTs are for. And if it's a $30,000 watch, you could perhaps take out a $25,000 loan against the value of the watch, trade some crypto, turn that $25,000 into $45,000, pay back the loan, and then now you have your watch and you have more money because you took some liquidity out against the value of your watch. So it's just another way to create debt. And, you know, debt drives the world forward. You know, every real estate property in Miami has been, you know, funded by debt. So debt is debt drives equity. So that's like the way that I kind of foresee watches getting valued. Which is kind of deeper. I wish I kind of went more into it, but, you know, watches right now don't really have value. It's very speculative, and that's why the market's dipped 40%.
Yeah, I was going to say that. That's a good point. So, like, in this world of watches, right? Like, in your opinion, what determines the value of watches? And I think too, just I'd love to speak to some of the early feedback that you guys have been getting, right? Because I think for a lot of people listening, right, like, maybe people are they understand NFTs and they understand, okay, supply and demand, that can create value. And that's what happened in the last bull. But then, of course, things can go south and a lot of them lost value. But on the flip side, watches, right? Actually owning the watch, having it is one thing, but then utilizing this technology that you built to own the, you know, watch-backed NFT, it's a whole different concept where I think it definitely takes a second to say, okay, I'm spending this money on the watch. I have this NFT and I can therefore benefit and get value from trading it and then maybe taking out and getting liquidity from that. But what has been some of the early user feedback and sort of the questions that you've had to really sit back with your team to get clarity on, okay, who is our target user? Is it people that are mainly crypto? Is it the watch native people that are saying, okay, how can I adopt this new technology? Because I love wearing the watches, but I'd also like to understand how I can benefit from the financial aspect of it without having to, you know, have all of them. I'm just curious to know, like, what have been some of the lessons learned from this concept and sort of the go-to-market that you guys have done since you launched the platform? And I think as a founder, it's so important to share those lessons, number one, to just reflect on them, but number two, to teach others and obviously share lessons learned.
Yeah, it's a really multi-layered response here. It's, you know, for one, you have the crypto market, which is always looking for something new, right? Like, a lot of people, and I think this is what differentiates us, is a lot of founders in the Web3 and the crypto blockchain space, they like to come up with products that seem cool based off new technology. Like, oh, this exists, let me create something for it. Like this type of, you know, smart contract. Or I'm going to make this, but for Cosmos, or this on Solana. We are very focused, you know, very problem focused, and we create solutions for the problem. So like the biggest problem that anybody has right now is like, what is the true intrinsic value of a watch? So we've created an analytic platform that lets you actually see the value of watches in real time, which is, you know, the biggest question mark. Even the most experienced watch traders, they buy a lot based off emotion or based off their experience, not based off a chart, right? And I want people to start thinking that way. And you've seen it, like, you know, a lot of collectors or traders have started to turn into like investors. Like people buy watches with this concept of like, oh, like what's a good buy that's going to go up in value? So I've really targeted that demographic, but I also haven't over-marketed our product. Like I post on our Instagram, I post on my page, but I don't really like do much to put our name out there because we're still in such a build mode right now to get to like where we want to be. You know, like, we're still technically in beta behind the scenes, like building. And there's a lot, like we have two companies in one. We have the analytics platform and then we have the trading exchange. So that's kind of like who we've been focused on. But at the same time, IRL, we've been doing a lot of networking with major liquidity providers, crypto whales, big time watch collectors. And the response has been like, you know, like this is the coolest thing ever. People have told me that this is the coolest company they've ever heard of. My investors constantly tell me that this is the project that they're most excited to see play out. And I think it's because we're doing something that's just so unique compared to a lot of the other, you know, things that are coming up in the space, especially during this bear market. And, you know, where I really think our first users with this platform will be, and based off, you know, my feedback, is going to be the crypto demographic that has money on chain, has the ability and the interest in learning about a new product, and really kind of like proof of concept building with this small, you know, network. We're going to keep the product, you know, relatively exclusive. You know, the inventory, we're going to not have too much up there. We're going to do it small and make sure that end to end, the experience is perfect. And then for the real rollout, that's when I anticipate kind of like, you know, going to the corners of planet Earth and being like, watch collectors in Taiwan, Tokyo, Paris, London, Miami, everybody get behind this. It's super cool. New way. And I don't want to get in the way of, you know, the people that are buying, like, for example, you know, Timepiece Trading in Miami, right? Like they're the biggest, like they have every watch in stock. Their sales team's like on fire. Like they're the type of people, like you go to that boutique when you want to buy a watch that obviously is an investment, but you want to buy a watch that you've been like dreaming of getting, right? And they can deliver you an experience that I think should never get taken away from buying a luxury watch, like sitting down with a dealer, asking your questions, letting them tell you about the manufacturer. Like, and that's something you can't break, but that's emotional, right? Like why you're buying a watch at a jewelry store. I think there's a whole new level where you're going to have people that are in crypto kind of like at the end of the day saying like, damn, I bought 25 Rolexes today, or I flipped like 15 Richard Mills in the last 3 hours, just like bought, sold, like kind of just like you would with like a stock or a crypto. Like, who cares if you're going to ever use the blockchain? Like, you're never going to wear these Rolexes. Why do you care what the dials are? There's just, you know, it's an 8.9 out of 10 condition. It's a black dial. It's a Rolex. It's stainless steel. Like, it's just another way to make money and speculate. And, you know, I kind of see a world where people trade watches in this light. And, you know, the generation that's already been making money, the millennials and above, like, you know, I don't want to say we're stuck in our ways because we're always open to new things, but like, it sounds a little weird to us, right? But, you know, think about like a 17-year-old right now who's absorbed in, you know, watch negotiation content on TikTok or celebrity jeweler content on YouTube and Instagram. They see all the deals getting posted. When they're 22 years old and they're making their first paycheck, you know, they're going to be confident and they're going to say like, damn, I understand the watch industry. I want to make money off watches. Like, I want to get involved. And they're going to demand financial products built on top of other assets than what we're used to, whether it be trading cards, wine, liquor, watches. You know, that's the generation that I'm really focused on seeing adopt our technology. And I want to build up until then so that they're able to, like, you know, say, hey, I want to put $50 to work in a Rolex backed ETF, or I want to, you know, just diversify and put $50 into a liquidity pool that's supplying a Richard Mille loan that the borrower is using to finance a property. Like, you know, I want to create those products around watches. And I think there's a world where you can do it with the manufacturers that are only making, you know, 10,000, 5,000 pieces a year, and there's so much demand. And
No, when you say that, too, like, that makes sense of, like, the different financial products that you can create within the whole ecosystem of that. That's very interesting there. When it comes to the team, what does the team look like nowadays? I know, you know, you talk about finding these early initial designers, and I think just the entrepreneurial journey of those core team members that you find and start to work with early on are the foundation of everything, right? Like, it doesn't move forward without the team that's in place. So how has the team changed over time, and what does that look like today?
Yeah, the team evolves a lot. You know, in a startup, you got to be a family, or, you know, a really trusted crew. I think a family is not the right term because, you know, at the end of the day, some people come and go, but you got to be a really trusted crew and organization. And we've been fortunate to build like 75% of our operation in Miami.
That's great.
Where I think really things started kind of like turning successful was when I brought on back-end engineers. So Vinny, my co-founder, and then Chris and the people that we work with in Miami, like, just building out a core unit really helped us get moving in the right direction, especially having a back-end engineer that can kind of, like, you know, I can focus on creating something for the 17-year-olds of tomorrow, but then, and I shouldn't say 17 because they can't invest at this age, but like when they're 22, like 5 years from now, I can focus on the future. I can study, you know, socioeconomics. But then at the same time, like, even like right now, there's a meeting with the engineering unit and there's like 9 guys on that call going through like what the operation is for the next 24 hours and what everybody's getting done. And to have like those soldiers moving forward on the project, that's why we've been able to create so much value, get so much done in such a little bit of time. And I'm like, I know our product's not live right now, so I'm just, you know, selling what it's going to be. But on the other hand, like, I have the dashboard demo version of it, and it's sick. Like, it's insane. It's the coolest thing I've ever seen. And it's thanks to these guys. You know, I can sit here and get everybody excited. I can, you know, talk to the right investors and get tapped into the Web3 community. But at the end of the day, like, the ones that are actually bringing this thing to life is like the team. And I think that's what a lot of people have seen about us. And that's what they like about us. And like the commitment that everybody has, you know, it's bar none. Like, we're not another like wallet or another, you know, like we're something cool. Like, we're watches on the blockchain. We're not like, you know, another insurance product or something boring. Like, it's cool, you know, it's cool. And that's what they love. And I love, and
That's great. And I think, and I'm sure the whole team loves watches outside of just the investment side of it. They, you know, the culture there is very clear to me in terms of how you can create a culture that has a similar passion, not only on just the technical side, but just on the actual physical watch collecting itself.
Yeah. They, and if they didn't love watches before they got started, now they do. But it's always in like our LinkedIn and our posts, whenever we're looking for like a software engineer, it's like, hey, like, you need to have 7 years of experience. You need to speak these languages. Also must have incessant passion for watches. I'm down to talk a little bit about advice, I think.
Go ahead though. I mean, I think I was just for the sake of the conversation too, and time as well. I always like to end my podcast with not only advice to your younger self, if you were to go and start Watches.io again, but, you know, advice to other people that are building in the space that you are. I think this industry of Web3, obviously, as someone that raised capital in 2021 for a creator economy and just understood the landscape at a deeper level, crypto went through a very turbulent time, as did a lot of other companies in different spaces. But crypto specifically, you sometimes find bad actors, which can kind of create this narrative that if you're not in the space, you look at it and you're like, wow, like, what does it feel like to be building in that space during this time? And I think there's a lot of lessons and sort of advice that you can have for people that are A, either interested in that or B, in it, but just looking for, you know, a similar mind that is in it as well that they can relate to. So we'd love to just let you answer that open-endedly in terms of advice to younger self if you were to, you know, restart and relaunch today, but also just about all things crypto related?
Yeah, I mean, in a very simple one sentence format, crypto is going to be the single biggest industry in the entire world over the next 10 to 15 years. Like, there's, in my lifetime at least, and I'm 28 years old, there's never been a bigger disruption to anything than crypto. Like, machine learning, artificial intelligence, like, you know, it's improved work. Big companies have been adopting it for a while. I understand that recently it's become, you know, democratized. But, and there's a lot of cool products that are coming from it, but they're just going to play into how we're creating a new financial system. Like, money just absolutely runs the world. And, you know, that's one thing I want to point out. So if you think crypto's dead, or you think crypto's something that you should be turning a blind eye towards, I understand Bitcoin and Ethereum and Solana are like risky investments. That's great. Don't buy them then. Stick to the S&P. But in terms of the technology and the actual use case, it's there. Like, you know, digital currency is there, smart contracts are there, you know, custody and all the creative products that come from the space and DeFi are all there, and NFTs. So yeah, that's number one. So anybody that's interested in this space, do not give up. Just keep holding on, figure out a way to build. Number two is, like, you know, I think what I always try to tell myself when I hire somebody or I bring somebody into our organization, and you could probably tell that I'm a little bit more intense and I'm passionate, and you know, I say to every single person that I interview, I tell them, I'm like, do you have a can-do, all-willing, self-starter attitude? And I look at them in the eye when I say this. And then I ask them, I'm like, are you willing to put your back against the wall and grind? My team works hard, I go hard, and everybody here wants to be here. If you're not interested in being here, you just want the money, or you just want to be a part of the at watches, like, not going to last. Like, this is not that type of organization. Like, we really build. And when you say that to somebody, you weed out 90% of people that are not going to be a long-term fit just by asking that question. And I think, you know, it's very important when you're building a startup that you're not going to, like, you know, because I know the feeling, like, you want somebody on your team, you think they have the right skills, but you don't want to be, like, aggressive about it, or you don't want to be, and you know what, like, ask them that question. And if they say, like, or they don't immediately say, I'm down, this is all I want to do, then, like, just, like, save yourself the couple months and the money and the stress, and just, like, find somebody else. And I think you kind of got to be a little bit, say, cutthroat, because you're not firing somebody at this stage, but you got to be a little bit, you know, impartial with your decision making and realize what's best for the company and just move through things. And, you know, getting a startup like this off the ground is something that takes also a lot of, like, and I've, this is what I'm super inspired by from you, Casey, but, like, it also takes, like, a lot of, you know, mindset and body and mind alignment, you know, like, how you're always exercising.
Yeah, you gotta get your mind right.
Yeah. Like, you can't, you know, consume fast foods and not get exercise and then expect to be able to, like, lead 10 people that are all super high powered bionic humans to, like, actually like work at your level, you know?
Yeah.
All my diet is super clean, no processed foods. Like, I stick to a lot of fruits and nuts and vegetables and clean proteins and meats. And, like, I sleep, you know, 7+ hours a night if I'm able to get it, and I don't wake up from stress. Like, you know,
all this is the epitome of what makes greatness happen, is that true. And I think it's, like, the modern way, right? Like, you see these founders that, of course, there's times to pull all-nighters, and I believe in that, but if you're not operating at full efficiency because you're not eating right, you're not physically active, you're not, your mind's not there, you're doing yourself and your team a huge disservice.
100%. Like, my team, I also tell people, I'm like, we're weed free. I know there's the creative cool thing, but this isn't you're not going home and smoking at night. You're not going to be, you know, plugging on a vape all the time. Like, this is an operation where you have to be focused on the future, and we're investing into you. We're telling you how, when you're on the team, it's an open book, man. Like, I even let my team decide their bonuses. I tell them, I'm like, how do you think you performed over the last month or 2 weeks? Was it 25%, 50%, 75%, or 100%. And I'm not going to fight you. If you tell me 100%, that's fine. And I'll tell the team in the next meeting, I'll be like, hey, you know, this guy told me that he was at 100% the last few weeks. So, you know, if you guys want to, like, continue doing this, like, it's not like, it's not like in that kind of like shun you approach, but what I'm actually, to be honest, my team, everybody goes 75 to 100 like every single time. But, and 75 is like, most of them will say 75 because they know that 100 means like I must not have been sleeping, you know?
Yeah. Yeah.
But it creates a culture of like high performance, and it creates a culture of like, you know, if you're a misfit, and I think a lot of like the internet sensationalizes kind of like, I'm going to drop out of college, do whatever I want. I'm going to be a schlub and I'm going to try to get a company off the internet money. And like, I think that's like kind of what it promotes. And I think that to be successful, that's not what works. Like, I think your team has to be, you know, all on the same mindset. Everybody's got to be focused. Everybody's got to get the toxins out of their body and laser it on. And like, yeah, I think that's what creates, that's what differentiates us. You know, everybody knows that the Watches team goes hard.
Yeah, that's great. I love it, Jake. Well, before we wrap up here, I think not only have I learned a lot from this conversation about the product and how you view your team and the company as a whole, but what are you most excited about looking forward? And then where's the best place that everyone watching or listening can stay up to date with everything that you have going on?
Yeah, absolutely. Most excited for this exchange to come live. I think I'm really convinced it's just going to change the way people interact with watches. I think the industry is going to be severely disrupted. I think everybody that's right now knowledgeable about watches, currently sells watches, currently buys watches, or has a lot of money in watches is going to be far more successful going into the future from our product. I hope that what we create inspires the major players out there, the watch boxes, the Chrono 24s of the world. I hope that they try to move into a direction that's more similar to what we're doing. I hope that the IRL traders and jewelers also adopt what we're doing and try to move in this direction, because I think what we're doing gives the industry the biggest opportunity, the biggest upside. So I'm just excited to see like the world change from it. Then to get connected, for one, my personal Instagram, if you have any questions or you just want to chop it up or stay connected to the journey from more of a behind the scenes approach, anybody can reach out to me and I'll typically respond. And then in terms of the company, it's at Watches on Instagram, at Watches on TikTok, Watches.io on Twitter, and then the domain's Watches.io. And, you know, there's customer service concierge at the bottom. There's a sell a watch CTA, so you can, you know, sell us your watch. Yeah. Any way that you want to stay connected.
Yeah, no, and I'll make sure to link that all below. I mean, you can't miss it. At Watches on Instagram, come on.
The best.
Well, Jake, just before we wrap up here, I just want to say thank you so much for taking the time to come on the show today. I really appreciate you and all the information. Everyone that's listening or watching, make sure you go check out watches.io. Go give Jake a follow at Watches. And once again, Jake, thanks so much for being here today.
Dude, thank you for having me, man. And congratulations on the success of the show. It's an honor to be on it. The list of people that you've had, and epic.
Thank you, man.
Congrats on everything. And thank you.